Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
It is a Friday. It is great to have you in live from Los Angeles. It's the Herd, wherever you may be and however you may be listening. It's iHeartRadio. It's Fox Sports Radio. It is FS1. Packed today. Clippers Jazz tonight. Nets lost to the Bucks last night. Phoenix just sitting around waiting for this party to get started. Phoenix Suns are just... All right, we did our job.
Well, they probably have a little anxiety.
Little, right now. Chris Paul.
Yes, but, you like the extra rest.
So, here we sit this morning. It is, there's so many things. Last year we had the bubble, and it was the year of the young teams doing better than expected. And this year, it's the healthy teams that are doing better than expected. The Phoenix Suns are the really healthy team. So, let's just start with Brooklyn-Milwaukee. Listen, Brooklyn's playing 5.5 guys. James Harden right now is about 50-60%. That's what they're playing. Brooklyn's playing with 5.5 guys. They looked exhausted by the end of the game. I know fans always want me to give their team credit. Listen, the Raptors won a title because Golden State stars were all hurt. You weren't the best team. I can't give you credit. Visa's in the credit business. I'm not. Milwaukee shooting 28% from three-point land, 68% from the free throw line. If Kyrie was healthy, if Harden's 90%, series is over. It'll be over this weekend. Brooklyn's going to win it. But when Kyrie was healthy, and again, that's with two other stars, you know what I mean? Kyrie was averaging 23-24 a game, five. He'd be the difference. Harden would be the difference. You don't even need both of them to beat Milwaukee. If you just gave me Harden at 100% and KD, you'd win the series. If you give me the first two games, I basically got KD and Kyrie healthy. They blew Milwaukee out. The games weren't even competitive. So, and it's funny because there's this sense, the stars always get the calls. The truth is about the NBA, and they did a study on this years ago. It's far worse in college than the NBA, but home teams get the calls. Because of the proximity of fans to the game, they're right on the floor, referees hear that, and they are influenced more than an NFL official 20 yards from the crowd, a hockey official, there's glass, baseball, you're miles away. But in basketball, officials, because fans are right on the floor, they're screaming, foul, come on, foul. We're human beings, you're influenced. Now, college basketball, according to the study I read, way worse than the NBA. NBA refs are just better, less influenced. But the home teams get the calls. And think about this. Where does the average NBA series start and finish? At home for the better team. The better team had the better record. They get the first two at home. They take a lead. And there's middle games for the road team. And then the better team gets the last game at home. So when you're watching the first two games of a series, your first thing you see is, oh, the stars are getting the calls. And then if it goes to a deciding seventh game, you're seeing, well, the stars got the calls. No, the home team got the calls. If you watch this series, Milwaukee is allowed to play hyper-physical at home. The refs are letting them grab and pull. How can you tell? Look at the stats. The Nets are shooting almost 50% at home and 41% on the road. What, Kevin Durant forgets to shoot on the road? The three-point line, it's even worse. 42% for the Nets at home, 28% on the road. So their officials are actually, in this series, the influence of the officials has been very much pro-Milwaukee. They're letting the more physical team grab and clutch at home. This was, for years, the secret sauce of the Utah Jazz was Stockton and Malone and Jerry Sloan. They were always the best home team in the NBA, but they were strangely average on the road for being a great team. Why? Because they played so physical. And the only team that could beat them was Chicago, who had a relentless Rodman. Jordan, Pippen, Ron Harper, Rodman. They were even more physical. But Milwaukee right now, with Drew Holiday and P.J. Tucker and Brooke Lopez and Forbes, they're a more physical team now. They were finessed 2-3 years ago. They're physical, and it's giving them a huge break at home. So fans think the Stars get the call. The home team gets the call. Look at Milwaukee at home. They're a totally different team. And, I mean, nothing against Giannis and Middleton. But the Nets are not only tired offensively, they're tired defensively. When Middleton and Giannis combine to shoot 64%, I like them. Ain't that good. That's better than Michael Jordan. They're not that good. So I look at Brooklyn as a shot fighter, a tired team. They got to go home, sleep in their own bed, get up for Game 7. You know Harden will be better in Game 7. He was better last night than he was in Game 5. He'll be better in Game 7, probably 75-80%. I mean, after the game, even the coach for the Nets, Steve Nash, sounded tired.
We weren't well tonight offensively. You know, out of rhythm, out of sync. You know, we definitely didn't play the way we wanted to play, the way we planned to play. And I would say that for the entire game. You know, we had a couple stretches where we played okay, but really didn't play the way we wanted to play offensively. But just not a great game from us. We just didn't have our best stuff tonight. And, you know, we got a Game 7 on our home floor.
They just didn't have their best stuff. It's hard when people are tackling you. All right, so I talked to Mark Cuban last night briefly. Mark Cuban has gotten rid of his general manager. And he moved on, and his coach, Rick Carlisle. I'm not going to tell you everything, but I will say this. The one thing Mark did share with me with Luka, Luka's 22 years old. He became a global sensation in the last 6 months. It's hard. It's hard for 32-year-olds, 42-year-olds, 52-year-olds. He's 22. He's emotional. He and Rick Carlisle sometimes argued, oh boy, end of the world. He had a lot of technicals this year. Mark told me yesterday, hey, we're just working through it. Great kid. Great kid. Fantastic kid. He's 22 years old, became a global star. Give him a break. So here's what's really happening. And Mark Cuban didn't tell me this, but this is my belief on what's happening in Dallas. So we all know in life that if something happens to us earlier and we kind of screw it up, and then we have the second opportunity to do something, our first experience will influence our second experience. So they drafted an international star, Dirk Nowitzki, and wasted a lot of time with him. They drafted him in 98, and they didn't get a title till 2011, and they were rarely special. Then they draft Luka, who plays a lot like Dirk. You can't stop him, except he's better than Dirk, and he's 22, and he's international, and they ain't going to screw this thing up. There is a sense of urgency in Dallas. We got our second Dirk Nowitzki, and he's better, sooner, and it's ramped everything up. And they've had him for 3 years, and they've only made the playoffs twice, and they got bounced early in both of them. I get it. You had Dirk, and don't get me wrong. Dirk had a great career, and you should be very proud of the championship. It was a crazy team. But you drafted him in 98, and you didn't win a title until 2011, and you were rarely special. And I talked to Mark about this months ago, and he said, hey, we made some mistakes. And then it's almost like you photocopied him and you got Luka again. And Dallas like, okay. We got the better version of him. Even Dirk came out last week and said, no, Luka's better than I was. And it's like, okay, it's natural now. They're not going to waste any time. Because there was a sense with Dirk, and this is my opinion, they kind of wasted some time. So Donnie Nelson. Let's talk about him. The race for Luka is to get a number two. Porzingis ain't it. Hardaway is not it. Good players, not it. Donnie Nelson, the year before Luka, had the number 9 pick in the draft. He drafted a bust, Dennis Smith. You know who got drafted after that? Donovan Mitchell. If Donovan Mitchell was drafted with Luka, this team's in the finals multiple times. Can't make those mistakes. Can't make those mistakes. It's not like you went Donovan Mitchell to a borderline all-star. Bust. 4 picks later, Donovan Mitchell. Time to go. You also wildly overpaid for Porzingis. Time for the GM to go. Rick Carlisle, good guy. 3 years, 2 playoffs. You're 61. He's 22. Generationally, it's probably not perfect. I mean, Stan Van Gundy, Zion. Generationally, probably not perfect. It's amazing Joy and I get along. I'm like the Stan Van Gundy of hosts. But the reality is, this is the natural progression when you had Dirk and draft Luka. They're not going to mess around here in Dallas. I've been saying this for 2 weeks. It is now a race to get Luka a 2. If I'm Luka, I do sign an extension. But Mark's got pressure on him now. The GM whiffed on Dennis Smith and overpaid for Porzingis. That's going to trap you now if you sign Luka to a massive contract if you can't unload that. Then the NBA, it's got to match salaries, so good luck getting rid of that massive contract for a big that gets hurt and super expensive. And by the way, Luka doesn't get along with him. They don't get along very well. So we can all freak out, but when you get a superstar this young, and by the way, when Luka has been in the playoffs so far the two times, he's averaged 34, 10, and 9. Dallas is not keeping up with Luka. Luka is carrying them. I mean, he has to be on the floor. You watch the Dallas Mavericks against the Clippers. He's off the floor. They're not even the same. They're not even a playoff team. I mean, so they have to draft somebody that can give Luka 5.5, 6 minutes, a half off, let him play off the ball a little. You can't ask this kid to play 47 minutes without a 2. You see how exhausted Durant, and Durant's the best scorer in the world with 10 years of experience on Luka. And you can see him last night. I mean, he's still great, but he's not quite the same, just in back-to-back games. So, you know, this is one of these classic, oh my God, what's going on? Mark Cuban, what's going on? I talked to Mark. He's like, listen, we got a 22-year-old superstar. He's a global superstar. He's a great kid. We're just working our way through this stuff. And it's just, you land these stars, you got to get stuff right, and you got to get stuff right fast. And I've said this, the draft now is a total crapshoot. Increasingly, you get 1 year of tape from college or no years of tape. A kid goes to G League like Jalen Green or Jalen Suggs, the two top picks next year. Suggs, you get 1 year of Gonzaga film, and Green, you get 1 year of G League film. That's what I mean. You're guessing, you're projecting on some of these kids. I mean, they're both going to be good. Suggs and Green are both going to be good, but how good? How much do you know? It's not the NFL where I got 3 and 4 years of tape. So they got to get on this stuff. A 61-year-old coach, Rick Carlisle, emotional guy. Luka and he had some tension. Boom, it's time to go. Rick's had a great career. He's fine. He'll get a job somewhere. But it's time. Blow it up. Let's go. GM overpaid for Porzingis. Butcher the Dennis Smith pick. Boom, it's time to go. Fresh start. Let's get a little younger around Luka. Let's get whoever you got to get. Let's get a little younger. Let's get some new eyeballs, a new voice, new sound, new look, new vibe. It's okay. It happens. This is the NBA. But there's a lot of stuff now. Oh, there's chaos. The media is a little hyperbolic sometimes, right? A little bit. I don't know. You made the playoffs. You took the Clippers 7. It's not the end of the world. It's just time to get a new GM and a new coach. All right, the Zion Williamson situation, do not confuse Luka Dallas issues with Zion Pelican issues. You know, some context to this story. Those are two, it may have happened almost on the same day. Those are two totally separate stories. That's coming up.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Good things come to those who wait. At Jersey Mike's, they come to those who don't, too. Download the app, order ahead, skip the line now through June 20th. Use the code THEHERD for $1 off your order. So we talked about Luka and Dallas. I think it's the natural progression of having Dirk, then getting Luka, the general manager, overpaid for Porzingis, bust on the Dennis Smith pick, Donovan Mitchell drafted after. You know, my feeling is they just have a sense of urgency, and that Dallas has proven it can be a good basketball city. They can win a championship. It's a very, very solid organization, top to bottom, not perfect. Now, Zion is unhappy, reportedly, in New Orleans. These are two different stories. According to reports, Zion family wants him out of New Orleans and the Pelicans. Stan Van Gundy got a lot of the heat because he was a, you know, he's a pretty rigid guy, demanding coach, and Zion's family didn't like that. But let's try to contextualize this here. Anthony Davis, get me out of here. Zion, his family, get me out of here. We went and looked up this morning when Chris Paul left. He wanted out of there. Three stars, get me out of here. It's not a small market thing. Westbrook loved Oklahoma City. Damian Lillard loves Portland. Donovan Mitchell, John Stockton Malone love Salt Lake City. Milwaukee historically has kept a lot of their stars. Don't make this a small market issue. San Antonio, Kawhi is the exception. Tony Parker liked it. Duncan liked it. Robinson liked it. Kawhi just had a Greg Popovich issue. Small market, Ja Morant has no issues. If you watch Memphis, the team that they're putting together, he's got no issues there. Let's not say this is all small market. Vancouver is one of the great cities in America, in North America, Vancouver, B.C. Stevie Francis couldn't get out of there fast enough. And it has beautiful women, beautiful scenery, big city. They're New York Knicks. They can't get anybody. It's New York. Nobody wants to play in Washington, D.C. It's like our seventh biggest city. Don't blame small market. This is New Orleans. It's a college football town. It's an NFL town. And the Benson family, proud, proud owners of the Saints, have done a very good job. I think they cared more about that pass interference call or no call against the Rams than they did about retaining Anthony Davis. Remember what happened. The NBA had moved a team from Charlotte to New Orleans. And then the owner, see you later. I want to sell the team. But the NBA was demanding the new owner had to stay in Louisiana and New Orleans. Well, the Benson family is the richest family, I think, in the state. There weren't a lot of offers. They went to the Benson family who owned the Saints and said, will you take them? They gave the Benson family an unbelievably low price, $338 million. And that was a decade ago. They could sell them now for 4 to 5 times that. With Zion, you could sell that team tomorrow for 4 to 5 times that. So, you know, this is like a side hustle. I mean, they're Saints owners. The Saints are a great franchise. That's where their passion plays. This was a, hey, it's a good price. And Gail Benson, according to John Hollinger, who's a well-connected guy, he says the Bensons are not currently seeking to sell, but they're losing money while finishing in the lottery has not been an enjoyable side venture to the main business of running the Saints. So, you know, Anthony Davis felt like this isn't really... I had a massive agent text me yesterday. He said, see, this is the second, third guy that wants out. Nobody's taken a shot at New Orleans, but, you know, let's be honest about this situation. The Benson family owns the Saints. They do a great job. The Saints are incredibly well run. One of the great GMs, one of the great coaches, just had one of the great quarterbacks. They've been fantastic. Now, I mean, we always say Michael Jordan couldn't play baseball. Randy Moss tried basketball. It's hard to be great at two things. It's also hard to be great owning two sports franchises. The Benson's loyalty and their passion is football, and they're great at it. The basketball, we got a good price on it. And the players can feel that. And, you know, listen, New York City's great, but it's never felt like a college football town. Phoenix is great. It's never really felt like a hockey town. New Orleans is great. It's never really felt like an NBA town to me. It feels like an NFL town. It's the South, it's college football, and I think the players kind of feel it. The players feel like, and you're Zion. You're this emerging super, I'm not even sure if you're emerging. You're about an hour from blossoming into. His family, his agent, probably in his ear, you know? Like Ja Morant looks at his team and thinks, man, we've done a good job. We made the playoffs. We've done some good moving around here. We got good players. I mean, I watched Memphis. I'm like, they weren't as good as Utah, but Utah was the number one seed. They were really good. Pelicans can't get into the playoffs. Players aren't happy. Players want out. So don't confuse Luka's situation with Zion's. Dallas has a history of being pretty well run. Playoffs, middle of the country, big sophisticated city. They've won a title. I mean, they were the first NBA team, if I recall, to really go with their own jet. Like, they've always been way ahead of the curve in terms of treating their players. So, you know, Dirk Nowitzki, like, could have left multiple times. He had no interest going anywhere. That tells you about that franchise. And even the problems Luka has had, reportedly, he's going to sign an extension because he knows it's a good place. He just doesn't love all the people there. Joy with the news.
No.
Turn on the news.
This is the Herdline News.
Well, as expected, Kawhi Leonard has been ruled out for tonight's Game 6 against the Jazz.
Still, they can still win. They won in Utah.
The injury. Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's a done deal. After the way they performed the other night, why not? Now, how they're going to do in the next series is a whole different question.
I think Utah's favored tonight by a point to a point and a half, I think.
They are 2.5-point underdogs, according to Fox Bets.
The Clippers are?
No. No, yeah, the Clippers are 2.5-point underdogs.
So that's interesting. So I would take the Clippers plus 2.5. I wouldn't touch 76ers Hawks.
Yeah, that's because a scary line.
The 76ers were so bad.
I don't think they'll be that bad again, but I'm not doubting the Hawks anymore.
Yeah.
Like that's I'm just going to watch that game and enjoy it. But yes, I would take the Clippers as well. So they were able to get that huge game 5 win thanks to Paul George's 37 points. I don't know what will happen after this series though. Like I could see them mustering another big performance tonight, but
you know
without
what?
Kawhi Leonard.
I'll be honest. I think the Phoenix Suns feel like a team in the finals.
Yeah.
Literally, I like the coach, I like the point guard, I like their construction. They've got a brilliant score. I mean, I look at Phoenix and I'm like, last 7 games, 7-0, shooting them 45%, 50% from the field. Phoenix gives me everything. They play 9 guys, 6 in double figures, coach of the year candidate, a true point guard. Like, when you look at this playoff series, of all the 7 teams left, the one team I'm like, that feels like a finals team. Without, not like Brooklyn's good, they're all beat up. I don't know what I'm getting with
them. They're healthy. The only question that I have with Phoenix is what's happening with Chris Paul.
That's right. That's it.
So we will allegedly find out on Saturday what the deal is with Chris Paul. But if he is able to come back, like if he's not able to come back for the series, I don't know how I feel about the Suns. They're not the same team.
Well, he'll come back for the series as a COVID, but he just may not be back for the first 2 games, right?
Maybe. I mean, we don't know what the situation is, though. Like, if he is positive, then he has to be out for at least 10 days. And what if he's sick? That could prolong it even further. Like, I don't know anything. I'm just saying, like, these are the scenarios that could possibly play out. Like, we don't have the answer on Chris Paul yet.
Right.
So, if he's not available, that's a whole different conversation. But, yes, if they're a complete team, I would love to watch the Suns in the finals.
Yeah, so would I.
So, the Celtics have traded Kemba Walker and their 2021 first-round pick to the Thunder. They'll also send a 2025 second-round pick to Oklahoma City in exchange for Al Horford, Moses Brown, and a 2023 second-rounder. Kemba spent the last 2 seasons in Boston. He had a disappointing year. He missed 29 regular season games and 2 postseason games to left knee issues. He has 2 years and more than $73 million left on his contract. And Horford was shut down for the last 28 games. Obviously, the Thunder finished 22-50. But the Thunder now have 3 first-round picks in this year's draft.
And it's a good draft.
Yes. So they have, with the Celtics pick, they also have the number 18 overall pick from the Heat and are tied for the 4th best odds in the draft lottery.
I mean, this to me, this feels like they wanted another first-round pick and were willing to eat Kemba's bad contract.
Yep.
And Boston just wanted out of the contract. So Boston's like, we got Tatum, we got Jaylen Brown.
We know what Al Horford is.
Yeah, we know. And we know Al. We like Al. We're maybe not a championship team next year. We'll have a new coach. But I think Boston's like, let's get out of this contract. It's going to be a wait. And OKC says, we're not paying anybody anyway.
Right.
It's the one contract we'll have. And Kemba's a good guy.
Like, and he's a great player when he's healthy.
That's
if he can figure out his knee issues over the offseason, then that's a good situation. I think, I mean, the Thunder obviously are completely going to be a really young team, but they have all the picks they could ever want to rebuild.
And
Boston isn't in a rebuild, but they are in a rebuild. boot.
Yeah, they just want to get rid of it. That's a contract and knees they want to get out of. They've got two stars they like. And, you know, I get it.
They need the flexibility.
Yeah, I don't think anybody's winning this. I think it's two agendas. Boston wants out of a bad contract, and OKC doesn't pay anybody. So they're like, listen, we're gonna be a bunch of kids. Let's get a good veteran, nice guy, people like, bring him in for a couple years, we'll eat the contract.
You don't always have to win a trade. It can just be a move.
Well, people have different... You know, the Jets needed picks. The Seahawks needed Jamal Adams. They needed a safety. So
you have different motivations and places that you are in as a franchise. So Matt Nagy has made it very clear that Andy Dalton will be the starter when the season begins and Justin Fields will be his backup. Fans and some media members are itching to see the rookie play, but Fields is all in on the Bears strategy.
I mean, if I don't believe in it, then it's not going to work out. So, I mean, my job is strictly to get better, be the best quarterback I can be, and, you know, help my team win. I feel like there's no reason not to embrace it. You know, I think there's a lot of people who would want to be in my shoes right now. So I'm just, you know, grateful for the position that I am. And
great at the mic.
You know, it is amazing. I've thought about this because I'm self-absorbed. How old is he?
Justin Fields is probably 21, I think.
I would have been so unprepared. I talk
22.
For 22. I talk for a living. You may have noticed.
Yes.
The idea that at 21, 22, I could step to the mic in Chicago and there'd be 100 media people and I could just be like that. Oh yeah. You know, I think, well, what's not to like about it? It's kind of, I think sometimes people can't handle themselves on Twitter.
Yeah.
These 22-year-old dudes, they walk to the mic and they're just like, the other day, Jordan Love walked up there. He was like, they're asking you questions about Aaron Rodgers. You could butcher the press conference. And he's just like,
it could have been a disaster.
We have seen coaches.
Yeah.
Adam Gase butcher press conferences. We've seen general managers book. I mean, the coach of the Philadelphia Eagles, the coach of the Detroit Lions, it's cringeworthy. You put kids up there and they're all like, yeah, I'm good. I can handle it.
Yeah, they're very impressive. I was talking about that yesterday. Like, I try to be very aware of how critical I am of these young people because I was a disaster at their age. Like, there's no chance. I don't even know. Actually, I would 100% not be sitting across from you. If someone gave me $30 million at the age of 21, there is not a good chance I'd be sitting here right now. I would fall apart. It's incredible the poise that they have.
It really is. I say this all the time. Look around the NBA and the NFL at the stars. Now, I mean, like, the knock on Luka is he screams at his coach. Well, yeah, I mean, he's like so obsessed with winning.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I'm not trying to pamper players because I can be very critical of players. But you look around the NFL and the NBA. I'll just talk to those two sports. And hockey doesn't have much of a problem either. Most of the great players at 22, 23 are shockingly adult, bizarrely adult.
I would say I would really give a lot of the former players some credit in that situation because a lot of the former players have made a great effort to kind of groom the next generation and go back and talk to them and give them advice about, you know, how you should what you should do with your money when you're young.
Right.
Get a financial manager that's separate from your accountant, that's separate from your agent, and, like, you know, make sure you have good people around you. You don't need to buy this. Like, don't go buy four cars, lease them. Like, I think that the older generation has really embraced, like, let's make sure that these guys are ready. They're going to these camps where you have legends, like, working with you on your mechanics and how to talk to the press and how to talk before the draft. Like, they're very prepared, but it's still on them to absorb it all, and they do an amazing job.
Yeah, they do. Joy with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Line
And it
news.
Struck me because Justin Fields looks 17 years old. He's got that baby face. You're like, he literally runs the franchise. He's going to run the franchise by September 20th. It's incredible. Rick Bucher's around the corner. We have some interesting stuff today. At the top of the hour, I'm going to do something. And I'm going to make a top 10 list. And I love lists, so I'm a sucker for lists. But I went and found the 25 best players in the NBA under 25. There is so much talent in the NBA. I'll try to list who, if I could pick them, It is shocking how difficult it was. Of all the lists I've ever done, This could be outside of the first pick. I could have blown the whole thing. There is so much talent in this league right now. Now, leadership questions, maturity sometimes, their kids, not all great, but talent is insane.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Hey, this is Jason McIntyre. Join me every weekday morning on my podcast, Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre. This isn't your typical sports pod pushing the same tired narratives down your throat every day. Straight Fire gives you honest opinions on all the biggest sports headlines, accurate stats to help you win big at the sports book, and all the best guests. Do yourself a favor and listen to Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Rick Bucher covering this league for, oh my God, like 27 years. That's a lot of sourcing. He's joining us now live, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz. The best or nothing. So I said to start my show today, there are times I cannot give a winning team credit. And Milwaukee is shooting 28% from three and 68% from the free throw line. I think their coach has been outcoached. And I thought Brooklyn looked tired. And I think Brooklyn will win game seven. And I know I'm supposed to give the winning team credit. I'll give the Suns credit. I'll give the Clippers credit. I'll give Atlanta credit. I feel like this has just been a series of bad breaks, and the Nets are holding on, and they'll finish it off in game seven. Is that a fair take?
It's a fair take. I don't know that it's a completely accurate take, but it's a fair take. Look, the number one element in game six was the fact that the Bucks outscored the Nets 26-4 in transition points, fast break points. The Nets simply weren't getting back. They haven't done well scoring-wise, the Nets, in transition this entire series. So it's not as if they're going to even it by scoring more in that direction. But they have been far better in getting back and slowing the Bucks down in that aspect of the game. Now, there is one element here that I want to see if it carries over to game seven. And if it does, then it could have a huge impact, which is the fact that Giannis Antetokounmpo made a concerted effort to only play below the free throw line.
Yep.
And to get to the paint.
Yep.
And be a playmaker or a score maker from a scorer from there. That is a huge impact. Absolutely no three shot in game six, and was just very deliberate in getting to the
yep.
paint. I don't know that the Nets have an answer for that. So if he can do that again in game seven, then I believe that the Bucks have a chance, even if they don't have the huge disparity in fast break points.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. Joey and I talked about this yesterday. I went in a rant about this. We want everybody, you know, Durant comes out, a 7-footer who can do everything offensively, and now we want everybody that's 7 feet to do everything. And it's like, no,
right.
Anthony Davis doesn't like, you know, he doesn't want to play a five. And Giannis, I don't want to see him shoot threes. It's cringeworthy.
Right.
Like last night, yeah. I thought Milwaukee said, just go do what you do. To your point, they did. Now, I will say this. I do expect Harden. He was way better last night than the previous game. I'll take Brooklyn. I think you're going to get 70-75% of Harden. I mean, my takeaway is you're going to get a better Harden in seven. Do you think they will?
No, I don't. And so much of it's going to depend on how the start is. The Nets cannot afford to have a bad first quarter. They can't afford to let the Bucks get out in front. Because of Harden's condition, they can't play fast. They can't get up and down. And what I also saw the Bucks do, which I want to know if it was intentional or it just worked out this way, is that they looked wherever James Harden was the help defender, and that's where they tried to go. They didn't try to attack him directly one-on-one, but wherever he was, that's where they went, because Harden is not going to sink and be a help defender and then run out to the three-point line. Most of the time, he was standing in no man's land. So if you saw where Giannis and Drew Holiday in particular got to the paint, if they turned the corner on their guy and Harden was the guy who was supposed to come and help, there was no help. And so they were able to get really easy shots in the paint or kick it out for a three and get that corner three. I want to see if they can be disciplined enough and whether it was intentional that they did that. And if they can, again, that's going to be a factor. Like, it says something about Harden's trickery and craftiness that he was able to manufacture 16 points in spite of the fact that he cannot turn the corner. And defensively, he is a liability in helping out. So that's my question. Were the Nets just indifferent? Did they take Reggie Miller's suggestion that they just sit Kevin Durant and James Harden in Game 6 and save him for Game 7? Because it looked like they kind of did that actively. Yeah. They really didn't give their best effort. Is that a reflection of, look, we know we got Game 7 in our pocket. Let's see if we can steal Game 6. If not, we're ready to go.
Yeah.
Or was it a reflection that, look, these guys didn't play a whole lot this season. They've been playing 45, 46 minutes every game. Is that having an effect, and is it going to continue to have an effect in Game 7?
Listen, this Zion story broke yesterday when we were on the air. Chris Paul wanted out of New Orleans. Anthony Davis wanted out. Now Zion's family does. John Hollinger reports they'd be the relocation team. The Benson family got a screaming deal when they bought it. They're a football family. This feels more side hustle. Agents and players can feel that. I mean, the Lucas situation feels much different to me. I think he'll sign an extension. This is Zion's story, to me, when he's talking about how much he loves New York, I mean, you go, he loves New York, he loved Duke, he likes big brands, and that's not hard to figure out. The shoe brand, Duke, New York, New Orleans, the football town. I mean, it does feel like this is not a 30-year marriage here. This is not happily ever after.
Yeah, no, it's fair. I do wonder how much of this is coming from the family and how much this is Zion. He's a small town kid. Everything I know about his personality, his demeanor and his attitude, he does not strike me as a prima donna who's like, I need to be on a big stage. I need to be in New York. I need to have a bigger shoe deal than I have. He does not strike me as being that. And he is not by any means a finished product. So the first thing I need to do is I need to sit down with Zion and know if in any way his feelings mirror what we're getting from the family members. Because family members are always a pain in the ass. They just always are. Yeah. They think their guy deserves more, better, etc. I need to know if Zion feels that way. The second thing that I'm doing is I'm going to hire Mike Krzyzewski now that he's in retirement. And I don't know that it's as a coach, but it's as a consultant. Somehow, some way, I am getting him into my organization because while I don't believe that college coaches necessarily make great NBA coaches, I do know that Mike has a way of talking to stars and obviously has a relationship with Zion.
Yeah.
And if I'm going to find a way to keep Zion happy and figure out how to build a franchise around him, Krzyzewski's going to give me the roadmap to doing that. And I just think it would be a great comfort to Zion to know that he has that voice and that guy to turn to as he goes forward. Because the number one thing is, I do want to see if I can get him to that max extension. It may be like LeBron and his run in Cleveland, where I'm only going to get him, you know, for a certain period of time. But I'd love to see where I could go with Zion, because you're never going to get it's not as a player, because there's a lot to work on with his game, but just as a star and as an attraction, you're never going to get that again in New Orleans on the level that you have Zion, any more that you're going to get another LeBron James in Cleveland.
90 seconds left. I thought that game for Paul George was so significant, not only for the win, but Steve Ballmer's reaction with him, that he could be a step-up guy, he could be the best player, and I watched that game and I thought that will resonate even if they lose this series because Kawhi is out. That will matter, that you can trust Paul in the biggest spot in Clipper history. I really felt it had that kind of pull. Did you?
No. They have to finish it. They have to win it. They're going home. There's no reason that they can't replicate this in LA. If you don't win the series, that was a nice accomplishment. But we've seen this from Paul George before. He's had big games the game before the biggest game. and then delivered incredibly small in the next one. Now, the beauty of what the Clippers have and the reason that I think they should win and close this out is because it's not all on Paul George. He has done a tremendous job, and Ty Lue has done a tremendous job of utilizing all the pieces that they have. And it's why I not only expect them to win Game 6, but I believe that with or without Kawhi Leonard, they have an excellent chance of winning the next series and going on to the finals.
Rick Bucher, Fox Sports NBA for a long time. Thanks, bud. Appreciate it.
You got it, Colin.
One of the things Rick talked about with Milwaukee, what they did last night, and it's a good point, they just Giannis, just do what you do. This is something we went on yesterday, is that everybody always talks now about the NBA. You know, it's positionless. I like my positions.
Phoenix. No, LeBron is positionless.
Yeah, so like, I like my point guard to be Chris Paul. Just because you can't find Chris Paul doesn't mean, you know, we're just going to make it up from here. Like, I like positions.
Maybe they were listening to the show yesterday, Colin.
It's very, you know, this, we have a lot of influence.
We do.
Not only at Fox, in America. But we went on this yesterday. We ranted on it.
Yeah.
Stop making him shoot threes. It's not what he is. Like, we do this in society now. There'll be this, you know, Jamie Foxx is funny, can sing, can act, and can dance. That doesn't mean Tom Hanks can. Okay, like, not every, Justin Timberlake. He's got a voice. He can dance. He's really funny. Okay, Jamie and Justin are rare. I don't need all the actors. I've seen a lot of actors try singing. It's not great. Hour two next.